Ladies and gentlemen, the family will be sitting through Wednesday evening at the residence of Tammy Kramer, 25715 Salem in Huntington Woods. Religious services will be held tonight and tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Contributions in Katie's memory can be made to the Jewish Hospice and Chaplaincy Network or to any charity of your choice.
Lekol zman ve'et, lekol chafetz tachat hashamayim, et la ledet ve'et lamut, et la ta'at ve'et la akor natua, et li frotz ve'et livnot, et li vkot ve'et lischok, et tzfod ve'et rekod, et lehashlich avanim ve'et knos avanim, et lechavok ve'et lirchok mechabek, et levakesh ve'et leabed, et lishmor ve'et lehashlich, et likroa ve'et lipor, et lechashot ve'et ledaber. For everything there is a season, a time for every experience under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance, a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to discard, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. Adonai ro'i lo echsar bin ote sheyar bitzeni al mei menuchot yenahaleni nafshi yeshovev. Yancheni b'ma'agalei tzedek lema'an shemo. Gam ki elech begeitz al mavet lo irara ki ata imadi. Shivtecha u'mishantecha hema yanachamuni. Ta'aroch lefanai shulchan neged zorai. Tishanta v'shemen roshi kosira vaya. Ach tov v'chesed yirdifuni kol yamei chayai. V'shavti b'veit Adonai le'orech yamim. God is my shepherd, I shall not want. God makes me lie down in green pastures, leads me beside still waters, and restores my soul. You lead me in right paths for the sake of your name. Even when I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You have set a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of God forever. We say shalom and not goodbye. For shalom is goodbye and hello and wholeness and peace, all threaded together in one breath. And in one breath, too, say goodbye to a hand to hold, a kiss, and a tight embrace. And in the same breath of shalom, we say hello to an ocean of memories and a rush of emotion, gratitude and sorrow, tears and laughter and trembling and fatigue, all in one breath. There is so much to be said today about Katie. What an extraordinary life. What an extraordinary woman. We have many people who are going to share their thoughts and memories of Katie, and I would like to begin by calling a lifelong friend, Jennifer Goodbinder, forward to share her thoughts.
I just want to start by saying I didn't want to be here. None of us do. Katie asked me to say a few words, and I loved her, so I will. Katie and I were more than lifelong friends. We were family. You see, the Zelenkos and the Kramers have been together for a long time, actually since the very beginning for both of us. I call Katie's parents Aunt Tammy and Uncle Charlie, and she called my parents Aunt Esther and Uncle Neil. When we were little, we went on family vacations together in campers. There's a picture, actually. We played at each other's houses. We shared dinners, brunches, we went swimming, we rode bikes together. I can't think of my childhood and not think of the Kramers and Katie. I remember when I was a kid and I might meet someone from Huntington Woods, I felt like I had instant street cred when I said I was friends with Katie Kramer. I was honored and privileged to know and love Katie my entire life. And to be counted among all of you here who loved her is humbling and overwhelming. As Katie and I got older, we shared in each other's bat mitzvah celebrations. I remember her smile at my sweet 16. And later when she went to University of Wisconsin and told me all about her sorority, and when she moved to Chicago and worked for Libby Glass, she showed me how to be brave and go away to school or for a job and try new things. We shared being brides and having babies. She got her PhD in psychology and worked with autistic children. Her commitment to reaching her goals and living out her passions were truly inspiring to me, as I'm sure it was to you. She had an amazing fashion sense, and her smile could light up a room. When I got engaged, Katie came with me to register for dishes. I love the stuff we picked together and think of her every day when I drink my coffee or eat a meal on the dishes we picked. Even though we lived in different states for the last several years, we always found ways to see each other and keep in touch. I was in town about 3 years ago and, of course, went to lunch with Katie. She had to leave a little early for what she assured me was a routine mammogram. I can't believe that later that day, everything changed so completely. It was such a shock and still is. She fought so hard with such grace and dignity, but I truly wish she hadn't suffered so much. That may be the worst part of this whole tragedy. Over the years, Katie and I have had lots of long phone conversations about life and love, as I'm sure her other friends did as well. If I wanted to talk to someone about how this is all feeling right now, I would call Katie. If I wanted to talk about a new recipe or perfume or makeup color, I would call Katie. If I was mad at my parents or my sister or my husband, I would call Katie. She was a great listener, supportive friend, shopping buddy. I can't believe she's gone so young, and I will miss her and honor her memory for the rest of my life. I just don't know who I'm going to call when only a call to Katie would do. Thank you.
Now I would like to call Dr. Richard Solomon. Katie worked with him on projects for children with autism.
That was not fair. This is really beautiful, very touching. So my name is Rick Solomon. I'm a developmental pediatrician who in 2001 had the good fortune when I was at the University of Michigan to hire a young woman named Katie Kramer. She was gonna work as a parent coach with young children who had autism in their families. I remember coming home a few weeks after we hired Katie and telling my wife, really raving actually, that we hired a woman who was a quick study, so good with family, someone who really cared, a child magnet, and such an amazing player that we really lucked out to hire her. Little did I know then how our lives would be intertwined. In our work, we videotaped every visit with the families, which included the parent coach, Katie, playing with the children so as to model for families. And we love Katie's modeling video so much, we've immortalized her on tape, capturing her delicate dance of relationship, engaging these very hard to engage children and having fun with them in a way that made them better. I think this really changed her life and it changed their lives. In fact, she was so good, so talented, and so smart that she left me. Actually, I encouraged her personal and professional growth and stayed in close touch over the years as she went on to get her psychology doctorate. Her dissertation involved doing an elaborate, in-depth interview study of adults with autism. The insights from her dissertation, which she shared with me, were startling. At turns humorous, hopeful, and heartbreaking. Success depended so much on breaking out of your shell, she discovered. Katie always broke out of her shell. She had an extremely sensitive, introspective nature with a deep gentleness in her old soul. She started her own consulting service and was very successful. She married. She adopted her beautiful boy, Nate, who will always know in his bones and his heart his mother's love. She got cancer. Her dad died. Despite it all and through it all, I always had the sense that she was meeting life in the moment with passion, a sense of humor, and a mysterious peacefulness. When she was terminally ill, she still gave back, creating colorful, fanciful, beautiful art objects for those who were suffering. She faced death with full awareness, great courage, and peace. I admired her so much. I thought I was her mentor. She was my mentor. After our last visit, I wrote this poem to her. It's called At Our Last Visit for Katie. Every day, I hold you in my heart. At our last visit, you looked so good, courageous and peaceful, making art for the suffering. Your old true love returned. Your racing dog retired, circled on his bed, dreaming of the past. On the mantle, a picture of the one you will soon see and the one you will watch over forever. When the fire burned to ashes, we knew it was time to go.
I would now like to invite Larry and Judy Dubin forward. Kitty, I apologize, to share some words of love.
My name is Kitty Dubin. I first met Katie 10 years ago when she was a classmate of my son Nick's, when they were both pursuing their doctoral degrees at the Michigan School of Professional Psychology. I was immediately taken with her vivacious personality, her brilliant intellect, and her total adorableness. She just popped as a person. Because of his autism, my son Nick was very nervous about making it through graduate school, and I honestly don't know if he would have done so without Katie's ongoing support. Throughout those years, Katie and Nick developed a strong friendship, and Nick often referred to Katie as Big Sis. Katie understood him in a way that no one ever had, and the feeling seemed to be mutual. Katie told me on several occasions that she considered Nick her soulmate. After graduate school, circumstances brought Katie and I closer, and we began to form a friendship. I'm 25 years older than Katie, but I never felt an age gap between us. We found the same things funny, loved to go shopping together, and had similar taste in books, films, and TV shows. Our topics of conversation ranged from the ridiculous to the sublime. We dissect the Real Housewives of New York City with the same degree of intensity that we would analyze the latest TED Talk. We both like to process events and relationships in our lives and try to figure out where we went wrong and how we could do better. We could talk for hours and never run out of things to say. Even though I had 2 decades of life experience more than Katie, I never felt wiser or more mature than her. By the time Katie was diagnosed, she and I had become extremely close. I was heartbroken that not only she was going through a difficult divorce, but now she had to fight breast cancer too. The whole thing was so unbelievably tragic and unfair. I kept wondering, why do such bad things happen to such good people? But I never got an answer. I was going through my own crisis at the same time. But in spite of all she was contending with, she was still able to support me. We were like two soldiers in a foxhole who were fighting very different battles, but we were always there for each other. We became containers for each other's feelings and always felt safe, knowing we could say anything we wanted to without any fear of being judged. I don't think I ever had a conversation with Katie where I didn't come away richer for it. Katie would always have a new piece of wisdom or a thought-provoking quote to share. These weren't cliches to be sewn on pillows, but rather deep philosophical statements with which she wrestled and encouraged others to do so. An example would be the Eckhart Tolle quote that she placed at the head of her website. It reads, "Acceptance of the unacceptable is the greatest source of grace in this world." That statement truly embodies what she was trying to achieve in the last 3 years of her life. And I believe she came as close to anyone ever could to attaining it. It was an honor and a privilege to be so close to Katie, especially during these last few years. I learned so much from her. Her bravery inspired me to have more courage. Her directness encouraged me to be more forthright. Her ability to let go of what she could no longer control permitted me to start doing the same. It was also very important for Katie not to think of herself as a victim. She repeatedly told me, "There's nowhere to go when you're a victim." And she was right. No matter how many incredible challenges she had to face, she maintained that belief right up until the very end. We often concluded our phone conversations by saying, "Left foot, right foot." Meaning that whatever horrible things were going on in our lives, the only option was to keep putting one foot in front of the other. Left foot, right foot. She walked the walk and she talked the talk. Katie Kramer was not a victim, but rather a shining star of a human being who I will always carry in my heart and I will miss like hell.
Good afternoon. I'm Larry Dubin. And it is an honor to be speaking with you today. Before reading some comments that my son, Nick, wrote, I'd like to offer a brief statement about why I loved and respected and found Katie so special. Although Katie was primarily Nick's friend originally, and then Kitty's as well, I also had a separate relationship with her. This friendship was based on a great mutual respect. She often ran things past me for my legal opinion, as I was always happy to help her in any way that I could. Especially after Chuck passed away, I wanted to always be there for her. I also sought her input on advice on some very important things that I was working on. I trusted her keen intelligence and her direct approach to giving me feedback. She was not intimidated at all by the fact that I had been a lawyer for almost 50 years, and if she disagreed with me, she wasn't afraid to stick to her position, and if truth be known, often she was right. She would not back down, though, when we had a difference. One other connection I had with Katie was that we were both compulsive physical exercise people. I run 4 miles every day, rain or shine, and Katie even in her most difficult days, would try to run, swim, walk, bike ride, if it was at all possible. Every time I would talk to her on the phone, the very first thing that she would ask me is, how was your run this morning? And I always answered, it was great. That response seemed to always please her, and I came to realize that she seemed to get a vicarious pleasure from how my run went every morning. So for Katie today, I would say to you, my run was great. Now I would like to read a statement that my son Nick wrote. Katie was like a big sister to me. We met in graduate school in 2004 and hit it off right away. I completely attribute this to Katie's ability to understand me as a person. Besides her background in autism, which piqued my interest in her, what drew me to her was, from the start, was her authenticity. Katie was the most authentic person I have ever met. She found it hard to bluff any moment or situation, and I don't think she would have been very good at playing poker. Katie was always herself, no guises, personas, or concealments. This was important to me because, as a person on the autism spectrum, I always need to know where someone stands. I can't tolerate game players. That was never a problem with Katie. If she was angry with you, she'd tell you. Conversely, when she said something positive, you knew that she meant it. She was not a yes woman. Sometimes she would unabashedly tell you things that you really didn't want to hear. However, this is what made communication between both of us seamless, because I never had to do any guesswork. I felt comfortable around her, which is nothing short of a modern-day miracle, since being social does not come easily to me. For a long time, Katie encouraged me to get a dog. She knew how much I loved animals, but I resisted because I didn't think I'd be able to care for a dog living by myself. I finally listened to her and adopted my dog, Sadie, and it turned out to be one of the best decisions of my life. Katie's main goal in life was to become a mom. She was a great mother who always put Nate's needs above her own. Her devotion to him never wavered, even during her illness. That only made her want to fight harder and harder to prove that she could still be there to take care of her son. And she was there for him until the very end. The most important thing Katie taught me was how to be a friend, and I imagine she would be proud of that achievement. All of her life, she tried to bring people out of their shells. After all, that was what her career was based upon. She succeeded with me in that I confided almost everything about myself to her, and vice versa. And I can attest to the fact that I would oftentimes see Nick on the telephone, which was something that was not his favorite thing to do, but for hours talking to Katie. That has never happened with any other person in my life, with the exception of my father. She was so smart when she came to her, when you came to her with a problem, she would dissect it using her analytical intelligence from every possible angle, and then always help me to make a decision that made sense. It's hard to believe that I won't be seeing the name Katie on my caller ID ever again, as we talked almost every day. My father and I visited Katie in the hospital this past Sunday, 2 hours before she died. I was heartbroken and I would never see her again, but I was grateful for the 10 years that I knew her and had the privilege of being in her life. Thank you.
Now I'd like to call Rachel Moss and Jody Miller forward, two lifelong friends who would also like to share some of their memories.
First?
Yeah, sure. We're a little bit impromptu, so please bear with us.
I just want to say the other speakers were amazing, and so many common themes seem to be running through all of our speeches, and I think that says a lot about Katie. I'm Rachel. I met Katie in kindergarten. We became fast friends. Our moms became friends. Our families became friends, and I realized this morning when I was thinking about this, I don't really have many memories of my life before I knew her, because I was so young when we met, and she just kind of always there. So from childhood to now, we lived in various cities and countries, and sometimes we were in spaces where we'd see each other regularly, and sometimes we would go for long periods without seeing or speaking with each other, but it was always like no time or distance had ever passed. The closeness never changed, and Katie was a major, major support of source and guidance and advice, always. You could call her always with anything, and she would be the one. And I was repeatedly shocked by how well she really knew me, and her words were always so spot on, and her advice, and she always made me feel very loved and very understood. And, you know, as she did with many in this room, which is why I think people are here. And the thing is, you know, I still hear her voice in my head in so many of my life situations. You know, her words clear my head, they put things in perspective. And literally, things that she has said to me have changed the course of my life and helped me make decisions that I may have made differently had I not spoken about them with Katie. And she would do the same. She would call me during crisis and positive things. And this is where I get a little bit Rachel on people, but we would often have these horrible conversations and then make fun of them afterwards, to the point where we would just laugh and laugh and laugh. And that was part of my biggest memory of Katie, is this constant laughter. I mean, till we peed our pants, if that's too much information, but we did. Like, we did. That was how much we laughed from childhood to now, always. And so a huge part of what I valued about Kate were the different sides of her, and where she was so intense and serious and analytical, and then in the same breath, she could just turn around and be equally as silly with the humor of this teenage boy giggling, and she was just this whole rounded person that had all these different parts to her that made her who she was. And we were just not above ending a very serious, analytical, life-altering conversation with a fart joke, okay? It was just something we did. But basically, to me, you know, Katie is. She's not, was a part of my life. You know, I really feel just because somebody dies doesn't mean you don't know them anymore. I know her. And I have her voice in my head. I have a lifetime of active, active memories that I can draw upon when I need to talk to her. I have her advice and her insight and her comments that have influenced me, and they'll continue to influence me, and they'll continue to affect my decisions and my life journey. And, you know, she has been very influential to me. So, you know, I'm sharing this because I know, I think, everybody in this room has been touched by her supportive and funny and loyal and open and honest and loving interactions. And I think the fact there's so many people in this room who know her from so many just varied and different situations and different periods in her life, yet all she was able to connect with everybody so deeply. And that's just a testament of her ability to deal with people, with her multifaceted nature, with her generous quality, and just her true, being just a true and honest person. And I think that's all I can say right now is I love you, Kate. And we'll miss you.
As Rachel said, we both didn't know if we'd be able to get up here and speak. But this morning we decided that, yes, we love her that much, that she was worth coming up here for. My friendship with Katie began in high school. I think the first thing that attracted to me was her smile and the warmth that she projected towards others. One of my high school memories with her was when I was learning to drive a stick shift car. She had her Volkswagen Bug and I had my red LeCar. We were driving in mine and I stalled at the corner of Lincoln and Berkeley in Huntington Woods. With the fear of oncoming traffic, she would remind me what to do, and eventually, after holding up traffic, I was able to move on. And that's how Katie was. She always sensed to, knew what to say, what to do to encourage you to move on. We went our own ways after high school. Years would pass, but we would always pick up right where we left off. There was never an awkward need to warm up with each other. Our relationship matured just like us in time, after marriages, babies, and life. She became more than a friend and felt like a sister. After she got sick, she wanted to acknowledge her circle of friends who were there for her and who she could count on. She bought us all necklaces. Here is mine. It also symbolized, I think, sisterhood, because she didn't have a sister and I didn't, and many of us also didn't, and so we kind of took that role for each other. Amanda, Tanya, Shauna, Debbie, Erin, and Rachel were all in the circle of friends, and we thank her. She was wise beyond her years. Our conversations were precious to me. I learned so much, as everyone else has, I think, shared that also. We both shared a love of teaching and children with special needs. Another example of her generosity is that she would take me for mani-pedis, and this was a little token of her thanking me for helping her with Nate. I enjoyed the time that we had in those chairs, and that was the real reason why I went. I haven't been back, and you can tell if you look at my feet. I haven't been able to go back without her. She was funny and she loved life. She was too young. During one of our conversations in her bedroom while she was in bed, and I would either lay near her feet so she could hear, so I could see her face, or in a chair pulled up to her bed. She read this to me and I wanted to share it with you. It was also on her website, The Life of Katie Kay. It's by Lisa Bronchek Adams and it's titled When I Die. When I die, don't think you've lost me. I'll be right there with you, living on in the memories we have made. When I die, don't say I fought a battle or lost a battle or succumbed. Don't make it sound like I didn't try hard enough or have the right attitude or that I simply gave up. When I die, don't say I passed. That sounds like I walked by you in a corridor at school. When I die, tell the world what happened, plain and simple. No euphemisms, no flowery language, no metaphors. Instead, remember me and let my words live on. Tell stories of something good I did. Give my children a kind word. Let them know what they meant to me, that I would have stayed forever if I could. Don't try to comfort my children by telling them I'm an angel watching over them from heaven, or that I'm in a better place. There is no better place for me than being here with them. They have learned about grief and they will learn more. That is part of it all. When I die someday, just tell the truth. I lived, I died, the end. And that was something that I will always remember, Katie reading that to me. Just end with saying, I do and I always will miss my friend / sister.
Finally, I would like to ask Andy Schaffman, another lifelong friend, forward to offer her memories of Katie.
I like to say you can't make new old friends. At camp, we used to sing, make new friends, but keep the old. One is silver, and the other's gold. Katie was my gold. When we were little, we didn't know whose house was whose. The Kramers moved next door to the Carnicks in the woods on York, and history was set in motion. I was 9 months old when Katie was born. She was my first and my only best friend. We were inseparable, frick and frack, tall and short, blonde and brunette, straight and curly, extrovert, introvert, bossy, and super sensitive. We were and always have been more like sisters than friends. Katie had the inside track on my truth and my family. She knew our strengths and our struggles, and I knew hers. We didn't have secrets, soul sisters. She adored and looked up to my older brother, Scotty. Katie was highly sensitive, deeply genuine, truly loyal, and a world-class listener. We spent so much of our childhood in each other's company, I'm shocked, frankly, that we didn't fight more. She loved telling the story of the time that I locked her in my closet because she wanted to go home without making up with me. I solved that one. The Kramers moved to Dundee, two blocks away, would have traumatized me if we hadn't moved right across the park a year later. We could see each other from the upstairs windows in our new houses. We would flash the lights when one of us would run home. Running across the park to Katie's house is in my DNA. It was the first thing I did any time we came home from a trip or up north. I had to go tell Tink all about it. We met many times halfway across that park after an argument. She never walked the whole way. I called her Katink, Tinkle, but mostly just Tink. And she called me Dra, Drea, Dura. And Tammy called me Anadra. We were family, and you've heard this before. We were a grade apart, so we never shared our friends. I knew and judged hers, and she mine. We were each other's outside authority on all things. We both had lots of friends through the years, but only one person either of us ever called our best friend. I was living in a one-bedroom apartment in Chicago when Katie graduated from Wisconsin, and she came to visit me for the weekend. I came home from a long waitress shift at Bistro 110, and Katie looked at me, big brown eyes, and said, "Can I stay?" "Of course," I said without hesitation. And just like all the sleepovers of our childhood, we slept in our queen bed together for weeks until she found an apartment. And then we got a lease, and we finally lived together. Katie loved her products, her creams, her glosses, makeup, scents, clothes, shopping. She'd walk into the apartment with a bag from Michigan Avenue or the drugstore, and she would proudly announce, "Products, I have new products." She always smelled terrific. She was not one who bought fragrance-free. Kate got a job at the same restaurant company, and we took the 151 bus together to work. We were growing up, or trying to. Living together, we worked out our childhood baggage on each other. Then she started therapy. Kate's new favorite word was boundaries. One night, I came home late from waiting tables and I gleefully grabbed a bowl of her crackling oat bran cereal. The next morning, Katie yelled at me, "That's a boundary. My crackling oat bran, you just crossed my boundary. That is a boundary." We crashed into each other like little kids. After a gym workout one weekend morning and over breakfast, Katie said, "Andy, if you really want to try your acting, you have to move to California. I'll miss you, but you need to go." I did. Then came her wedding, my long string of frogs, cross-country visits, long phone calls at all hours, and finally the fight before my wedding, and 5 years where we didn't lay eyes on each other or speak. During her first round of chemo while I was with Katie, she was so distraught over this loss in time of our 42-year friendship. I assured her that we had the rest of our lives, and like sisters, sometimes we both just needed to go through it. "We had time," I said. That answer didn't do it for her. She said, "Andy, not being friends with you was like trying to cut off my own arm." During my brother Scott's final decline, no one would talk about him more than Kate. She was not so secretly in love with him, though that reality was completely lost on my oblivious and brilliant brother. Kate said to me after his funeral, "Andy, you didn't lose your only sibling. You still have me." Here we are. The same week my brother passed, 4 years ago this Saturday, both of them within days of their 44th birthday. With her, he dies a little bit more, because no one knew him better than Kate and me. I was with Katie at the hospital at the very, very end. I had done all she asked. She was groomed, products applied, mellow music. Her scent filled the air. I curled up next to her in the hospital bed, twin hospital bed, all 5'10" of me next to my half-pint best friend, my soul sister. I said, "It's like when we were kids, Kate, sleeping under the Christmas tree." And she peacefully left one carnic and went to another. In the 7 years since we resumed our friendship, there has never been a crossword. During the years apart and the years afterwards, we had become more than adult women. We were grown-ups. We had bigger concerns than Cracklin' Oat Bran. A few weeks ago, I was lying in bed with Kate after listening to a tedious hour of Jane Fonda's book on tape. I asked Kate if she had any unfinished business, anyone she wanted to reconcile with. She sat up a little bit in bed next to me. She said, "Do you have anything you want to talk about, Andy? Are we good?" I looked over at that cherubic and now more angular, paler face and vehemently said, "We're good. We're all good." The next day, John Dorfman came to her house to discuss today. She had lots of plans. By the way, John Dorfman went to Burton, for those of you who didn't know, until fourth grade. Back then, he was known as JD, so we're with our peeps. John was telling Katie about a slideshow of pictures, and he mentioned that sometimes people record their thoughts to share at the funeral. Katie looked at him, a little confused. "What do I say?" she said. She lifted both her hands and she cocked her head. "Peace out." "Peace out, my soul sister."
This was Katie's request. Are you having technical difficulties?
We are.
Come on, Kate.
Seasons of love.
soon as I can catch my breath. I'd like to thank the Hartford Memorial Baptist Church Choir for being with us today. The director, Mr. Alvin Waddles, and the minister, Charmaine Johnson, is here with us today, and they just found out about that song yesterday, so they're incredible. Thank you. We've already heard so many beautiful, beautiful things about Katie, but I would be remiss if I did not share what the family shared with me yesterday, because if you can believe it, there's even more to tell. So allow me. When I think of you, Katie, the first impression that fills my mind is the sense of your ethereal beauty and luminous spirit. I don't know if you realize how truly beautiful you are, my friend, but I'm not just talking about your physical beauty, which is certainly fine. I am talking about the essence of your spirit, which touches me so. There is a gentleness about you which radiates to those around you, as well as a humility and a graciousness that is amazing. I can see it in your face and the way you carry yourself, but I also see it in your heart and the way in which you reach out to others. But make no mistake, my Katie is not a pushover. She is a strong, resilient woman who I greatly admire. You need to know, Katie, that you are so loved and one of the most beautiful, interesting, creative, funny, intelligent, beautiful, wait, I already said that, and talented people I have ever met. These are all words sent to Katie through emails on her website, The Life of Katie Kay. I wanted to read not only the words she wrote about herself, but the words friends and colleagues wrote about her. They express an admiration that is sincere and profound, a respect that comes not only from a life lived with purpose and drive, but grace and humility. The last email I quoted implored, "You need to know that you are so loved." Katie, I pray that you are listening, that your spirit, now freed from the pain of your body, is close, and you can hear the words that have been spoken about you here today. Your life, because it was bathed in light and love and generosity, is one that has affected and will continue to affect the lives of everyone you have touched. According to your dad, Charlie, it was like that from the start. I would like to share some more words written about Katie. These are her dad's words, written when he heard that she didn't have long to live. Something inside of him drove him to make sure that she knew what he thought of the amazing woman that she had become, so he drafted this note for her. From the beginning, her life stood for bravery. Though no more than 60 inches tall, she was a tiger on the soccer field. She became a high school student advocate to fight for fairness and conflict resolution. Not being placed in the gifted student classes only made her more resolute in obtaining her doctorate in psychology. And when fertility treatments didn't work, she flew to Houston to adopt Nate, an African-American infant, on the first day of his life. To her many friends and family, Katie was a stand-up person who always let you know where she stood, whether or not that stand was popular. Even in her final days of breast cancer, she took charge of her treatment. Katie's dad, Charlie, captured so many of Katie's incredible achievements, but allow me to embellish just a few because I think they speak to her tenacity. The family told me that Katie didn't just wait for Nate's adoption to happen. She willed it to happen. She researched agencies and enlisted the help of friends to create the best family book possible to show the birth mothers. She got on a plane by herself when the call came that Nate was going to be born. And the day after he arrived, she went back to the hospital to speak with the birth mother. She wanted to get to know her and to know as much about Nate's background as possible so she could teach Nate who he was right from the start. Katie had that level of courage and strength. Many women would have adopted that baby and never looked back, but Katie knew better. She knew there was another woman who had made a sacrifice so she could experience the joy of motherhood. Katie was not the kind of person who wouldn't honor that kind of sacrifice and that level of selflessness. Once home with Nate, she stayed home with him. It wasn't always easy, especially when Bernd was away for work, but Tammy was always there to help, as she enlisted the help of her huge circle of friends. She became immersed in him and an expert on him, just like she did with everything else. And when she chose to go back to work, she took Nate with her. She chose the Siskin Center where he could be just down the hall. Nate was the physical incarnation of Katie's fierce determination. And Katie took that determination into her treatment. She was not going to back down to infertility and surely not to cancer. She exercised for as long as she could. She knew it was good for her spirit as well as her body. She was an incredible swimmer, and as we have heard, she loved to run. And like her dad wrote, she might have been small, but that body was mighty. Katie told me that she did yoga with a broken pelvis. She couldn't understand how she was getting into so many positions. She also told me she went to the doctor and he wanted her to sit down immediately. That is how fragile one of her legs was. It was about to break. She knew she felt pain, but she couldn't give in. She wouldn't give in. And when mobility was an issue, she had a rod put in her leg. Even though more surgery was involved, mobility was a core value, and so she persevered. Katie was just the definition of perseverance, physically, spiritually, and intellectually. If she didn't like what she heard from her doctors, as I understand now from her lawyer too, she would do her own research, come up with her own conclusions, and tell them what she had found. She asked to go to her own tumor board meeting, and she did, contradicting her doctor right in front of everyone. When the doctor told Tammy and Charlie that she would be fine, she excused them from the room, spoke to her doctor, and then had them come back to hear the truth. Katie chose to face everything in her life head on, no matter what it was. She would say, "Bring it on." No intimidation, no backing down. Throughout her journey, she displayed a strength of purpose that was astonishing to everyone but her. This purpose included Project Give Back. Katie, despite her own pain and terminal diagnosis, was determined to find meaning in her illness and help others like herself through her treatment. Her blog says, "I am choosing to share this very personal experience in the hope that anyone who may be going through something similar will find comfort through hearing my story." Katie chose to share the details of her life to help. She found the things that made her more comfortable during her treatment and wanted to share those things with other people in pain, never considering her own pain, just other people. She created Katie's Kits, little swag bags filled with her favorite product: vanilla oil, lotion, vitamin E, even an eye pillow and an iPod Nano filled with music. All the products were a reflection of her style and her appreciation for fine things. Katie hoped to launch the program with 30 kits. So far, they have 28, just two more to reach her goal. And if these kits weren't enough, they were all in bags decorated with her own drawings. Katie began drawing when she was already quite sick. She was home and not quite as mobile as she would have liked. But once again, she did not allow that to stop her creativity or her desire to give. She created original drawings for each member of her very large family, dedicating each drawing to a specific person. One of her cousins made sure they were all shipped to their rightful owner. The drawings were a gift from Katie's soul, and her flair for creativity was one inherited from her mother and her grandmother. And Katie and Tammy shared a special relationship, a close bond. They were partners, united by the good, Nate, and the bad, cancer. It was not without its difficulties, as any good mother-daughter relationship is, but like every other bond Katie made, their connection was deep and true. When Katie needed help driving Nate to and from school and caring for him, Tammy was there. When it was Katie that needed care, she was reluctant. Being fiercely independent, asking for help was hard, but Tammy was there, always. Tammy agreed wholeheartedly with the quote, "To make the decision to have a child is to choose that for the rest of your life, you will live with your heart outside your body." Tammy was in awe of the outpouring of love shown for her daughter. She knew that Katie was loved by many, that her lifetime of loyalty to friends was unwavering, but to see it paid back was almost overwhelming. Friends came in from all over the world to see her. They stayed with her in the hospital, not wanting to leave her side. It was as though they were trying to show her that same loyalty, to make sure that she knew that they loved her as she loved them, as she had so many times given to them, they were giving back. For Tammy, seeing her daughter encapsulated by so much warmth and affection was simply amazing. Tammy said, "She was a miracle to me." And the family is so appreciative of everyone's love. They would like to especially thank Ashby, who helped create Katie's website and helped her make her dream of Katie's Kits a reality. He was at her side constantly and returned her devotion in kind. Katie shared a loving connection with her friends, her parents, as well as her brothers, Jordan and David. They fondly remember trips in the motorhome to Florida, Traverse City, Lake Leelanau, and more. They remembered breaking down in that motorhome more than once. Growing up, Katie's parents encouraged her to go out and explore. She spent a semester in England as well as a semester in Israel. She explored religion, learning from family friend Rabbi Sherwin Wine of blessed memory, learning everything she could, yet never closing the door on other viewpoints. Katie was a hard worker. From those first jobs dusting jewelry at Chin Jewelers, Salvatore Scalpini, her work with autistic children, she gave 100% to anything she did. Any less was not Katie. Katie was proud of many things. Of course, Nate, the work she did was a great source of pride to her as well. Her home in Huntington Woods was beloved to her. She loved decorating it and making it her own. Her dad wanted to see her settled there, and it gave him joy to see her in that home. Only Katie would buy a house and decorate it to her taste in the midst of chemo treatments. Her strength just seemed to know no bounds. Even if and when she was told she was terminal, she still felt she had much more to do, whether it was giving back to those with cancer like herself, or sharing her talents with her family, or even buying and decorating a house. Katie was determined to boldly live and be alive as long as she was on this earth. I would like to conclude with a poem that Katie put on her website as well. I'm so glad that so many of you went to see it. If you haven't, please do. It is called The Waking. She wrote, "I found this in the intro to Mia Farrow's autobiography, What Falls Away, and it turns out Retke is from Saginaw, by Theodore Retke. I wake to sleep, and I take my waking slow. I feel my fate in what I cannot fear. I learn by going where I have to go. We think by feeling, what is there to know? I hear my being dance from ear to ear. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. Of those so close beside me, which are you? God bless the ground. I shall walk softly there and learn by going where I have to go. Light takes the tree, but who can tell us how? The lowly worm climbs up the winding stair. I wake to sleep and take my walking slow. Great nature has another thing to do to you and me. So take the lively air and lovely, learn by going where to go. This shaking keeps me steady, I should know. What falls away is always and is near. I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I learn by going where I have to go. Katie has gone where she had to go. She is freed of the body that caused her so much pain. She will be so dearly missed by Tammy and Jordan and Mary, David, Quinn, Harper, Caleb, aunts, uncles, cousin, and countless friends who she loves so deeply. Her spirit will remain close to us, even though it went where it had to go. Please rise for the memorial prayer. El male rachamim, shochen bamromim, hamse menucha nechona tachat kanfei hashchina, im kadoshim uteharim kezor harakia mazhirim, et nishmat Karen bas chaim shehalcha leolama, ba'al harachamim yasireha beseter kanafav leolamim, ויצרור בצרור החיים את נשמתה, אדוני הוא נחלתה, ותנוח בשלום על משכבה, ונאמר אמן. Compassionate God, eternal spirit of the universe, grant perfect rest in your sheltering presence to Katie, who has entered eternity. O God of mercy, let her find refuge in your eternal presence, in the shadow of your wings, and let her soul be bound up in the bonds of eternal life. God is her inheritance. May she rest in peace. And we say together, Amen. Now we will say the Kaddish together for the first time as a family of mourners. Yitgadal v'yitkadash shemei rabah, be'alma divra chirute v'yamlich malchute, be'chayichon v'yomechon v'chayei docho be'Yisrael, ba'agalau v'zman kari v'imru, Amen. Yehei shmei rabah mevorach le'olam le'olmei olmaya, Yid barach v'yishtabach, v'yit pa'ar, v'yit romam, v'yit naseh, v'yit hadar, v'yit ale, v'yit halal, shemei dekudisha brichu, le'ela min kol birchata v'shirata, tush bechata v'nechemata, da'amiran be'alma v'imru, amen. Yehei shlama rabba min shemaya, v'chayim aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael v'imru, amen. Ose shalom bimromav, huya ase shalom, aleinu ve'al kol Yisrael, v'imru, amen. We pray that the source of peace sends peace to all who mourn, and comfort to all who are bereaved, and comfort to this family, as we say together, amen. I'd like to once again welcome the Hartford Memorial Baptist Church Choir.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Oh, this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the service. Friends are welcome back to the Shiva home.